Hi, everybody. This is Pam coming to you from the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering, and it's also freely downloadable on iTunes. As always, I have the privilege and opportunity to talk with another amazing woman, and so today I am talking with Christine. Hey, Christine, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thank you.
Great. I'm excited to have you on the show and to share your story.
Yes, I am very excited to be here, and I'm ready to share my story.
Great. Yeah. So to get started, could you formally introduce yourself, who you are and where you're from and what you do and all that?
Yes, I can. My name is Christine Ditz. I'm 22 years old. I just graduated from college in speech pathology as my major, and I live in South Bend, Indiana, and I actually am just trying to find a job right now in special education. So,
You just graduated with your speech language pathology degree, but you're trying to find something in special ed? Why is that?
Well, because you need a master's to actually work as a speech pathologist in the schools or the hospitals. So I can't really do any speech therapy right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can be a speech and language assistant in the schools in Indiana, particularly because there's a great need for speech therapy for kids here with speech impediments as compared to Illinois or something. So I'm really fortunate to live here.
Oh.
So, yeah.
So do you plan to go back to school eventually and get the master's degree?
I do, yes. I applied last year to graduate school last winter. I was on the wait list for 2 schools, and I didn't get accepted to one other. And then I ended up not being accepted to any of them. But I'm going to apply again to more schools in the Midwest, and hopefully I'll get in. So, that's my goal right now, to get the master's.
And why is it that you're interested in speech language pathology in the first place? What drew you there?
Well, actually, I didn't know much about it I was thinking about it in high school when I was maybe a junior or senior, and I didn't know much about it, much about what the field entailed, who I would work with, what kind of population I would work with, but I was just interested in it because I myself, I stutter, and I found out that was under the umbrella, I guess you could say, of speech pathology, and I wanted to help others who struggle with communication, who, who stutter as well, because I felt like I could share my story and I could help them recover from stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what brought me to the field.
Mm. Yeah, so how long have you yourself stuttered?
Well, I'm a little foggy on that because I don't remember much of my childhood and the way that I interacted with my family and my friends, but I think probably around age 5 or 6, so that would be about 16, 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And have you ever yourself participated in speech therapy?
Yes, I did when I was a senior in high school, so when I was like 18, for about 3 or 4 months, and I'm just surprised no one caught it earlier when I was in grade school.
You know,
sometimes the speech therapists come through and they screen for that, but I don't remember any speech therapist talking to me. So I had it a lot later in life. So,
I mean, what prompted the therapy when you were 18, because that just seems kind of odd to go for all those years without it and then suddenly have therapy for just a few months at 18. Was that when you were a senior in high school?
Yes. And the reason, I think, is because my stuttering became pretty not profound, but more pronounced, I guess, and more obvious when I was about a junior in high school. My self-esteem was pretty low. I had some depression and anxiety, and I just thought that, well, actually, I observed the speech therapist I had. I went over and saw what she did, and I really liked her, and I just thought, you know, I might get something out of it. And at that time, I was very involved in kind of the stuttering world. I was involved in a Yahoo group forum, like email listserv thing, where I talked to people from all over the world who stuttered, and about books on stuttering and all sorts of things. So I just wanted to explore every option to help me, you know, recover from it. So I kind of my own decision to do that.
Mm-hmm. So are you still involved with that Yahoo group?
I'm not actually, because I think mainly just because I was getting too many emails in my inbox every day, you know, like at least 20, and it was just too much.
Yeah.
And it would take a lot of time because I would want to reply to a lot of you know, someone's questions or some kind of topic we were talking about, but it just got to be a little too much, kind of consumed my life a little bit.
Yeah, I'm involved in a couple of those email lists as well. I'm on the Yahoo covert group, which is a really good group. I don't know if you identify yourself as covert or not. I did myself for a long time, and now I don't consider myself covert. I consider myself more overt, but still sometimes I can slip back into those patterns of wanting to hide it. And then I'm also involved with a group on Google called StutL. It's like the oldest email group for, you know, stuttering chat and whatnot. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like sometimes there can be just like way too many email messages, and it can be kind of overwhelming, and it can, you know, you feel compelled to want to respond to everything, but you can't. It's just way too time consuming, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what type of therapy did you get in high school from the therapist that you thought was, you know, pretty cool? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, we did. I think she first wanted to make sure I was aware that I stuttered and what some of my fears were that surrounded my stuttering behaviors.
Mm.
Like she had me write down a list of all my my fearful situations speaking, and so I would write down like this, you know, a hierarchical list of just, you know, the most fearful situation for me first, and then just kind of go down the list, and so that was good. And I don't think I actually went out and worked on that, I think. you know, I don't, like, one of them was talking to, like, older men, just because I feel like they, you know, they have more authority and they just seem more intimidating sometimes. But I don't think I actually went out and worked on that with any men. But I do remember one time we did kind of like a desensitization out in public by going to Target, and she met me there, my speech therapist, and she went up to somebody and she stuttered herself even though she was fluent, and she talked to someone who worked there and stuttered and said, you know, hi, my name is, and would stutter, and she asked the woman she was talking to, does it bother you that I stutter? You know, how do you feel? And she said, no, it's fine. It doesn't bother me at all, you know. And so that just, as the speech therapist was trying to show me that, you know, people don't mind as much.
Mm-hmm.
And we care about it and think about it more than others. And some other things were, you probably have heard of, or people who stutter have heard of, if they've had therapy, the cancellation technique and the pull-out technique. And so the cancellation, I learned that if I was struggling on a word, to just stop the word altogether if I was repeating it a lot of times or something, and then say the word again as fluently as I could. And then the pull-out was, if I was in the middle of a word stuttering, that I would try to pull myself out of it by just maybe an easy onset or something. Just if I was, for instance, sometimes I have a hard time on the word people.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of saying it like that, I would say people and try to bring myself out of it. So, but it's interesting because I never really use those in everyday life. And I think a lot of people who stutter can agree to that. It's very hard for us to use those techniques. But I did just form some on my own by, you know, doing easy onsets or slowing my words down a little bit, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So going back just a moment to when your therapist did some voluntary stuttering in the Target store, did you do it too?
I can't remember. I think I tried. I think I did when we were at the checkout counter. I was really nervous, and because I think that's one of the hardest things for someone who stutters to do that. Because, you know, of course you don't want to stutter more, you know, it's more embarrassing, but I think I tried, and I don't know how it went, but it was a while ago that I had that therapy, so.
Yeah. Now, do you ever do that now? Do you ever try voluntary stuttering now, you know, with interactions with, you know, people or, you know, friends or even people that you don't know very well, to just kind of advertise and put it out there right away to maybe lessen your own anxiety a little bit?
I actually haven't, which I feel bad to say that. The way I advertise my stuttering is through, if I get close to somebody, I usually don't tell strangers or someone I just met, but if I am getting to know someone, I eventually will say, oh, you know, you probably know, but I stutter, and then blah, blah, blah. But if I'm talking to a stranger or introducing myself, I will, and I stutter pretty bad, then I'll just say, oh, by the way, I stutter, you know, and no, I did not forget my name. That's what I, those are a lot of responses I get, which really bother me, but, so I don't voluntarily stutter, but I might, now that you've brought it up, I might try it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just yeah. Because I sometimes do that too, because, as I'm sure, like, you probably experience it as well, like, sometimes, you know, like, I can have really, really, really fluent periods where I can be talking and it's not obvious at all that I stutter, and then all of a sudden, you know, stuttering will come out or show up. And if I haven't said anything about it, or people don't know that I stutter, you know, I get the looks, and, you know, people look puzzled or surprised, or, you know, so to avoid that, sometimes I will just do some voluntary stuttering right away, so that I've kind of set the stage so that if it comes out later, it's not so weird, because it's already happened, and then I feel more comfortable with it. But I definitely know what you mean, because sometimes when you do voluntary stuttering, it turns into real stuttering. And then you're kind of like, oh my God, that's exactly what I didn't want to happen. and it did happen. But, you know, it's a good tool to have to just kind of, you know, use the word that you did earlier, desensitize yourself and just kind of put it out there right away so you're not obsessing about it during the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes,
so it's definitely, and if you're really thinking about, you know, going and getting your master's degree and working with people, and I have problems with that word too, people who stutter, you'll definitely want to be able to model voluntary stuttering for folks that you work with as well. So you might as well, you know, get really comfortable doing that, because it is a great tool for yourself, but it's also really helpful to be able to show other people how it can be done easily and confidently.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's definitely a good idea. I'd be really interested in just trying that out to see if, you know, I might be able to, after voluntary stuttering for a little bit, my words might come out more easily. And yeah, because one thing I learned too, through kind of the research and thing that I did on my own in high school with stuttering was, you know, they often tell you to feel the embarrassment, feel the fear and the your pulse rate going up and your face getting red and all that when you're in the moment, because the more you avoid it, like if you avoid words or you substitute words, the bigger the fear gets.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah.
And so, and again, that's, you know, like just like how you said that, that's just like the perfect analogy, the perfect desensitization that people use when they're trying to, you know, get over fears of all different things. Like if you're afraid of heights, you know, one of the things that you should do is, you know, climb up a ladder, you know, and just feel how scary that feels, and then realize, oh my God, I did it. I'm at the top of the ladder and I didn't get struck by lightning or nothing horrible happened. Or the mm-hmm. same thing if you're afraid of water, you know, that's what you're supposed to do, is get in the water and, you know, feel it and just kind of like live through that fear and realize that, you know, the best way to deal with fear is to face it. So, yeah. And plus, if you do more research on voluntary stuttering, and there is quite a bit out there, like, you know, you can just Google it and find stuff. The whole premise behind voluntary stuttering is that it gives you control. So you're stuttering when you want to. So the carryover effect from that is that when you get control by stuttering purposely, then when you're really stuttering, you can exercise some control in those moments as well, because that's what most people who stutter struggle with, the lack of control and helplessness that we feel when we're in those stuttering moments.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely a good tool for you to look into and you know, maybe get more comfortable with, you know, like maybe over the rest of the summer and before you actually find a job, because then you could also apply it in the job setting and see how that goes as well.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So as a young person, you said you were 23?
Yes.
Yeah. So as a young person, you know, like interacting with other people, making friends, socializing, hanging out, going out and stuff like that, how does stuttering impact you in those areas, or does it?
Well, some areas, I guess you could be, actually, we talked about this at the NSA conference that just went on this month, July 6th to 10th in Fort Worth, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a lot of 20-somethings workshops,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about the unique problems and challenges of 20-somethings, and a few of the topics were like dating and interviews and things like that. And so I thought about myself, you know, my experiences with dating, and I've never really had a problem in that area. Most of the people, and I've only, I guess, haven't really dated. I've obviously gone on dates, but usually they were within a relationship. And the guy I was going out with did not, he didn't really bring it up or make fun of me or, you know, stop dating me because he found out I stuttered. They got to know me first, my personality, and things have gone well in that area. And then for interviews, actually, I just recently had an interview maybe about a month ago, and I was stuttering quite a bit more than I would have liked. and I noticed that I would look down a lot, you know, look down at the floor after I stuttered, and I thought that I wasn't creating a very, like, confident impression on them or a good impression. I didn't want them to get that feeling. But, I think what I will do is just say right off the bat, just to, like, or if in a moment I'm stuttering I'm stuttering a lot, I might just say, oh, by the way, I stutter, just so they know and they're not, wondering, is she really nervous or what is this?
Right.
Yeah. And also, one thing that I have a really hard time with, and I'm sure I'll, you know, continue to have a problem with it, may or may not, but it's not just limited to just being someone who's in their 20s, but just in introducing myself is very hard. And so I find that sometimes, you know, when I go to the bars or when I when I go to a restaurant and I meet some new people, I hate saying my name. I try to avoid it as much as I can. Even the other night, I was out at a little cafe, and the person I was with, his friend came up to him, and they started talking, and I didn't know his friend, and he didn't know me, and I tried to not make eye contact with him, because if I did, he'd be like, oh, you know, who are you? What's your name? So that's not a good thing, but it's just one of those things that I hate doing, because I fear the reactions of what someone's going to say, or how they're going to react. So that's my big struggle right now.
Have you ever had somebody react the way that you feared that they might?
Yes. A lot of times I usually get the reaction like, did you forget your name? And I sometimes can't believe that anybody would ask that because it's just, I mean, who would forget their name?
That's exactly.
If you had a stroke or you had, you know, dementia or something like that. And, you know, I'm young and I didn't have a stroke. that, and then just some other thing, someone will laugh or they'll grimace or, you know, I never know what they're going to say. One guy at a bar once, I started to say Christine like that, and that's usually how I say it, and I guess my mouth was kind of moving back and forth, and he imitated that that kind of movement in my mouth, but he was like Kare, just back to me, and I knew right away he wasn't trying to help me out, he was just mocking me, and I just got so upset, and I don't get angry that often. It takes a lot to get me upset. But so, yeah, I never know what someone's going to say.
So did you say anything back to him, or have you said anything when somebody's, you know, mocked you or asked you if you forgot your name? Like, how do you handle that?
Well, in that particular instance about the one I just talked about, I just continued to, I stuttered a little more on my name, and then I said it. Or I will, most of the time I just say, oh, you know, I stutter sometimes, that's just the way it is, that's just how I was born or something. And one time in high school, I I was in an art class, and I was just stuttered on, I was talking about LL Cool J, I don't know why, but I said, and I stuttered really not very, it was a very small stutter, and I said LL Cool J, and this boy in my class who had always kind of, just he wasn't someone I liked, and he didn't like me, he finally, he's like, Christine, why do you stutter? And out in front of everybody in class, and it was a class where you were allowed to talk freely because we were just painting and drawing and we played music. But I was really embarrassed, and I tried to explain it to him, and you know, no one knows really why we do it or the cure. I mean, there is some theories, you know, that it's genetic, but at the time, you know, I myself couldn't explain it, and I was trying to answer that question for myself. So when I answered him, I was like, well, it's kind of something in the brain, and it's this and that, and I realized that later that I didn't have to explain it to him, that he didn't deserve that response, and that really it's like explaining to someone why you have blue eyes or why you have blonde hair, and it, you know, it's silly. So all I say is just, you know, I stutter, and that's just the way it is. And they either accept it or they don't. So.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, and if they don't accept it, that's their problem, right?
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that that's how you were going to respond, because some of us, you know, get so caught up in that you know, emotional complex feelings of you know, oh my God, what do they think of me, that, you know, we allow, you know, the stuttering and the negative responses that we get to just eat away at us. And that's what causes, you know, the anxiety and the depression and the self-esteem stuff, which I think you mentioned earlier at the top of the conversation. So it's just really important that, you know, we don't let somebody else's, you know, dumb comments to, become internalized with us, because, you know, just like you said, it is what it is, and it's part of who we are. And if other people can't understand that or accept that, then, you know, we just need to, you know, realize that's on them, and they're missing out on getting to know us, and they're missing out on getting to know the terrific Christine, and that's on them.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for that. That I'm perfect.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned that you had just recently gone to the NSA conference in Fort Worth, and I was there as well, and we didn't really see each other because there were so many freaking people there. It's great when there's so many people there, but when it is so crowded, you just don't get to see and connect with everybody that you'd like to. But was this your first conference, or have you been to others?
This was actually my second conference. I went last year into Cleveland, Ohio. So yeah, I wasn't sure about coming, not because, you know, I didn't want to come or anything, but I just didn't think I had the money. But I asked Tammy for a scholarship, because I know you can do that your first couple years. And so I was able to come and pay part of my way. And I hope to keep coming back next year, for every year, for the rest of my life. I love the NSA and the conferences. So.
Yeah. What's so special about them?
I feel like it's like I've always kind of had a problem, I think, with making friends. Not that I am like socially awkward or anything. I don't think, but you know, I'm very friendly and outgoing, and I mean, I do have friends, but just not as many that I would like. Well, anyways, when I first went to the NSA conference last year, didn't matter who I talked to, I would connect with them right away. And you know, obviously the one reason that we connected was because we had something in common, which was stuttering. And it feels so good, you know, the NSA's motto is kind of, you know, you are not alone, and it feels so good to know that I'm not alone, and that for so many years I felt like that because no one could no one could relate to that to my problem, and so I just made friends like right and left, and I connected with almost everybody I met, and you know, there was just so much energy there. Everybody, you know, wanted to go out, and everyone wanted to, you know, just spend hours talking to each other, and it was just so much fun. Sometimes even more fun than college, because I always hear that, you know, college is so much fun, and you know, it's the best 4 years of your life. And to me, it was like it was okay, you know. But I mean, I felt like I had a whole college experience right there, you know, meeting everybody. And it just was so exciting because stuttering has always been a huge part of my life. And seeing other people and hearing people who stutter, because it's interesting to me. And I, you know, everyone's stutter is different. And that was just neat to hear that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So, now, yeah. Did you get a chance to meet any people this year that were there for the first time?
Yes, I did. I had a chance to meet with some people that are there for the first time. I'm going to try to do that more and more every year. I'm, you know, I'm still going to see the friends, my old friends that I've made, but I want to meet as many new people as I can, because I just love getting to know new people and hearing their stories. And everyone, though, at the conference just seems so genuine and caring and kind. So I love that. But yes, I definitely met new people, and it was great. Great.
Now, did any of the first timers remind you of yourself when you attended the first time? Like, could you connect with that feeling of, oh my God, I'm here, what do I do?
Yeah, let's see. Well, it seemed like, let me just think of the people I met. I was talking to one guy, Sean, and he was about my age, and I think he just kept saying how great the conference was and how he was meeting so many new people, and that's how I felt last year, too. And I think the first time you go, you can either be very overwhelmed and kind of shy, or you can immediately jump right in and just talk and be very outgoing. And a lot of the people I met first timers, you know, really got involved in the workshops and, you know, meeting, just socializing. And they had so much energy. Because they probably felt the same way I did, that, oh my gosh, you know, these people stutter. And most of the people who are first-timers haven't met really that many people, or if any, people who've stuttered before. So it's just a great feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also kind of nice, at least I do feel like this. I've been going, this year was my sixth time going. And to me, it feels really important to meet some first-timers and really, you know, welcome them and greet them and talk to them, because I remember how overwhelmed and scared I felt my first year. And if I can help somebody, at least one person, not feel like that at their first conference, I think in a way that kind of helps me to give back a little bit. And mm-hmm. I do think that that's what, like, these self-help conferences are designed for, you know, not just for us to get something out of it, but also to give back to others who are just starting that journey for themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I saw you last year at Friends as well. Now, mm-hmm. Now at Friends, you were volunteering as a student, like, helper, right?
Yes, I was. I actually just kind of got pulled into it. I came at the last minute. Some of the friends I had made there were also volunteering, and I wanted to as well. But I learned later that it was for graduate students.
Oh.
And I was still in college, undergraduate, and so I said, am I in the wrong place? But it ended up being fun. I went into a room where it was, we read a book to some little kiddos, maybe ages 4, 5, 6, and about late bloomers. It was really a cute book, and then they made like a tree or a tulip or anything, and they would, maybe on the petals of the tulip, they would write things that they bloomed late in life, like maybe riding a bike or learning math or anything like that. And so yeah, we just had fun. And I think another one we did was Kirsten Chema, I don't know how to say her name, but she's a speech pathologist and a professor at Northwestern University in Chicago. But she and her husband did this like team interaction, like team building workshop, where we just kind of played games and did these little trust activities. And a lot of the kids showed up there, so that was really fun.
So what did you learn from that experience working with kids primarily?
I think kids just seem it's interesting. Sometimes I wish I was a kid who started, because you don't have a lot of that emotional baggage that comes with it. You're very kind of carefree and innocent. You are open about your stuttering, it seems. From what I've seen, from what I saw there, kids would just kind of stutter and not worry about it. I also did another little workshop where we all sat down in like individual circles, and we had to finish a sentence, stuttering is, and a lot of the kids would say, stuttering is a part of me, stuttering sucks, or stuttering is this or that, or stuttering is a journey in life. And so these kids seemed like they just learned so much about themselves and their stuttering, and I just kind of found that really inspiring.
Yeah, it kind of, when I've experienced that as well at the Friends Conference, or even at the NSA where I've worked with some kids as well, it kind of makes me feel like, damn, I wish I had that attitude when I was their age, because then you're right, then, you know, I wouldn't have grown up with so much baggage that I did, and spent so much time being covert and trying to hide my stuttering because of the shame issues, which, you know, can get really, really deep if you're not just, you know, open with who you are. So yeah, it's definitely, it's good to hear that you had an opportunity to work with kids, because that's so important for us to do as adults, to kind of be role models for them as much as possible.
Definitely.
Now, I wanted to just ask something that, again, you brought up at the beginning of the conversation, which kind of stuck with me, and I wanted to be sure that that I, you know, asked you about this, and this probably will be the way that we wind down. But you mentioned that one of the things that you want to do, you want to, you know, get into the speech pathology field, even now working as an assistant until you get into grad school, because you want to help people recover from stuttering. What does that mean to you, recovery from stuttering? And is that possible?
That's a very good question. I actually didn't really believe someone could recover from stuttering. And people can take it one of two ways, the meaning of the word. They can think that, oh, you become fluent, you know, you are at least maybe 90 or 95% fluent, or you can recover in the sense that you've accepted it, your stuttering, and you, your stuttering does will lessen, but you just have this peace of mind about it. And one man that I actually interacted with on this the Yahoo chat forum that I was in high school, John Harrison, he wrote a book, I think called Relinquishing Your Fears of Speaking Before People, something like that. And I was actually, I actually wrote a little testimonial for that book. But he in his own like personal kind of biography that he writes in the book in the beginning, is he says, you know, he calls himself a recovering stutterer, and that he stuttered for 35 years of his life. He's probably in his 70s now. And I just, that is so inspiring to me. I was like, oh, so, you know, someone really can recover. Someone can really accept their stuttering. So to me, I think if I'm working with a child or a young adult or an adult who stutters, what I want to get across to them is that what I also learned in speech therapy myself is that becoming fluent shouldn't be my goal, but my goal should be being able to say what I want, how I want to say it, to who I want to say it, and when. That was just kind of a neat little thing that I took away from therapy. But really, what I probably want to emphasize in therapy when I become a speech pathologist is changing your attitude and your view about yourself and stuttering, and just becoming to a place of self-acceptance. And that's just, you know, being able to advocate your stuttering, saying, you know, understanding that stuttering doesn't define you, and that you're not just a person who stutters, that you're so much more, you know, you're a student, a friend, a daughter, a son, anything. And, but for me, that, and I've always, there's always that quote or just the saying that, you know, the first step to recovery is acceptance. And so I think it's a continual process that there's hills and valleys, and that there'll be days when we don't accept our stuttering, but that if you've already kind of gotten, if you've reached that point of acceptance, that you can quickly bounce back and accept it again, and kind of just feel like you are recovered. So I think it's possible, but it's just a mind shift, I think.
Oh, great way to put that, because I was a little worried that like you were thinking that, you know, people could actually recover or overcome stuttering, you know, physically and become 100% fluent, and I'm not convinced that that's possible. But yeah, you know, the insight that you just applied to explain that was just great, the way you kind of sum that up, because that's really an insightful way to consider recovery. Now, do you consider yourself to be in recovery?
I do. Actually, it's a little confusing right now for me. I actually lately in the past couple months have become more disfluent, almost to the point of where I was at disfluent, how my fluency was in high school, which was about moderate. And I've always been a mild stutterer. And I'll use the word again, but in a different sense, recovered or bounced back from a stutter. So for instance, if I stutter in a sentence or a conversation, I won't let it bother me, and I'll bounce back to where I was. But I think that, forgot my train of thought there. I am having a little trouble now with it for just some personal health reasons. It's kind of upsetting to me, and I feel like I don't have control over it right now. But the fact that I, you know, am accepting of it, and that, you know, I will just stutter and keep talking and I won't, you know, get depressed about it is a good sign. So I consider myself recovering stutter. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And that's, you know, again, a really, really healthy attitude to have. I'm hoping that, you know, listeners that will tune in to this episode will, you know, really get a lot from what you've shared, because you are, you know, a young person, and you're just kind of beginning out on your journey, and, you know, you've said some really, you know, inspiring things. But if you had to give you know, some short, quick advice to, you know, young girls who are in their teens, who are stuttering, who are finding it, you know, really overwhelming and like wish that, you know, it would go away. You know, having been there yourself and, you know, still being a young person, what would you advise teenage girls who are dealing with stuttering?
I would probably say that, to surround yourself with a lot of positive people, friends, family, anybody like that, anyone who is encouraging, and to also be open about your stuttering, share your feelings, you know, with people you trust. Make sure your family understands, you know, how you want them to treat you. And just know that, you know, it will get better, because it does get better. I just found that with maturing and just becoming more, I guess, my mind just kind of forming, and in college, it became easier, and you're not as bothered emotionally by somebody who will make fun of you. But it'll get better, and be open about it, and surround yourself with positive people.
So. Mm. Well, thanks for that, because I know that people from all over and different walks of life and different ages tune in and listen. So, you know, thanks for that, and thanks for being a guest and wanting to share your story. This was great getting to know you a little bit more, and you know, thanks for being so authentic, especially since you didn't know where this conversation was going to go. So thanks for sharing.
Yes, no, it's been great. It's been my pleasure, and I want to thank you very much as well for inviting me on your show and your podcast.
Oh, yeah, terrific. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.